Awesome. Any questions from anyone? Do you have any from your list? Or?
Yeah.
Well, one thing is asking.
Is that a statement or a question or soliloquy?
Well, if we want to put it short, we can say that when people are about to die, when something is happening and they understand they're going to die soon, then immediately they realize that they have to be very much focused on the purpose of their life, and they have not to waste any time, and they become really focused and concentrated on the highest thing. But otherwise, if somebody will tell them, oh no, you won't die soon, then immediately they will forget everything.
Yeah.
So how can we be concentrated and how can we be focused during our life and not to get down with the regular routine as it always happens?
Yes.
How to be aware?
Well, that's an excellent question. A few things come to mind. In literature, art, there's a theme, I believe it's Latin, Memento Mori, which translates loosely, I think, remember, you will die. So, it's not only a focal point, as you point out, for those engaged in theistic culture, but even in the secular world, this sort of remembrance has been used to bring about focus. Because otherwise, we have a tendency to be seduced by the dailiness of ordinary life. And really, this is the beginning of spiritual culture, when Sukadeva Goswami begins his response to Maharaj Parikit, who asks him, What is the duty of one in life, specifically for one who is about to die? What did he say? Varyan Eshate Prajna Loka Hitam Ripa. Saying this question you're asking, it's not just good for you, it's good for everyone. Loka Hitam. It's beneficial for everybody to hear this answer. And then, Nidraya, Tainaktam Vyavaya Nichabhavaya, something. Atma Sanyeshu. I forget the Sanskrit. But he starts telling him about how generally people are lost in the ordinary life, the dailiness of living. And even more specifically, in family affairs. So, family relationships, job, occupation. And he says, Ayur Harati Vai Pungsang, slok, talking about the rising and the setting of the sun, saying, both with the rising and the setting of the sun, is another day wasted for those who don't use their time engaged in spiritual culture. Srila Gurudev also liked the Moha Mudgara Stotram of Shankaracharya, because there's a similar slok there, beginning with Dina Jamino. Because Shankaracharya, he took sannyas when he was like 6 or 8, something like that. Imagine that. Like, he was writing his Vedanta commentary when he was 9. Being an incarnation of Lord Shiva. Shankar. So, he was so, the personification of a brahmachari, sannyasi, had no conception about the male-female relationship. But he could understand from literature or things that he's read in the scriptures that this would be important to understand. He's saying it's appearing in different places, but he couldn't understand really what they were talking about. So he thought, he needs to experience this. So a king was dying nearby, and Shankaracharya thought, I'll inhabit the body of that king. When his soul's leaving the body, I'll enter there and keep the body maintained for some time. But he told his disciples, anticipating how absorbing this male-female relationship and all the things that expand from that, for stri, and the word for a woman and son, that stri means who expands. So he thought, on the basis of what's described in the scriptures, I could get totally lost there. So he wrote this Moha Mudgara. Mudgara means a hammer. So it's the hammer for smashing illusion. He's saying, if I won't come out of it, then these verses here, just read them, pour them into my ear, and that will awaken my consciousness. And so the king died, and he took the body of that king and enjoyed conjugal relations and as in a kingly way. And yes, that time came where his followers had to speak the Moha Mudgara Stotram to him. And a famous ending is Bhajagovindam, 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 Udhamate, Sang Prapte, Sang Nihite, Nahi Nahi Rakshati, Dukarin Karani. But earlier, there are many slokas there. One is this Dina Jamino sloka, which is parallels the Bhagavatam. Someone at the mat saw, we put this sloka on the samadhi and said, Shankaracharya. I said, yeah, Shankaracharya. You know, we're bringing him, Gurudev, like this very much, and he's that great Shankaracharya. He'll also have some position. They thought it was objectionable. But the parallel is saying, by the rising of the setting of the sun, we mark another day wasted. Or as someone put it, more and more of less and less as time goes on. And whenever someone gets a disease, it's very popular in the modern world under the influence of secular humanism. They'll talk about someone who's battling cancer. They announce it someone out and they'll go, but he's a fighter. He's going to fight this thing. He's going to beat it. Well, I'm betting on cancer. I know there's some place in Ireland where you can bet on anything. and even one writer who passed away recently, who's an atheist, he saw the humor in this, and he said it's as if saying, like, after a long battle with mortality. So what are we fighting? We're fighting mortality. We're not going to win that fight. So we have to acknowledge that. It's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadi, Dukkha, Doshanu, Darshanam. What's the darshan, the perspective, the view of material existence? These four things, Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadi, birth, death, old age, and disease. Duk means suffering. Everyone here will have to suffer from that. So, the theme of mortality is there in fine art and literature. Whenever they're dealing with this, a little bit of reality is creeping in. There are no stories that are just like about happiness, or we know the fairy tale, they always have the end, they lived happily ever after. The same. But everyone knows intuitively that's sort of not true. First of all, they didn't live forever, and they probably weren't happy all the time. So as people say, oh, that's just in the movie, or that's in the story, you know. But even in literature, the themes in literature are loss, mortality, many things. Books that grab the imagination, hold the imagination and capture the attention, deal with these themes. The temporal nature of existence. And the more qualified the writer is in their presentation. I've mentioned that Chekhov was the master of short stories. He's telling one story about a man who's, and this will parallel what we're talking about. This man is interested in this girl. It's a Petersburg story. Not only Petersburg, but I think that's where it takes place. That type of. And so, at some party, the girl that he's interested in hands him a note saying, "Meet me in the graveyard at midnight." So, this is like life, a little bit. So he's thinking, this is a joke. You know, he's playing some kind of mind games with me. I'm not so foolish to respond to something like that. That was at around 10:30. By around 11:15, he started thinking, but like, what if it's for real? Then, looking at the note, around 11:30, he calls his driver. You know, get the horses ready, the carriage. And they go out to the graveyard for midnight. And then this is the mastery of the story. And so you think this is the story, the guy going to meet the girl. It seems like a ordinary enough kind of, but that's not his, he wants to draw your attention to something else. So while that man is in the graveyard waiting for the girl who never arrives, she doesn't come. So you think, what? End of story? That big build up for nothing, right? No. While he's there in the graveyard, he starts looking at all the gravestones and he sees the names of so many girls, their birth date and their death date. And he's thinking, oh, they were also beautiful young girls and lost in romantic embraces, this, that, and the other thing. And this is their position. How brief that was. Like the Shakespeare line, out, out, brief candle about life. How, again, the Gita, anityam, asukam, lokam. What is this world? It's not only full of suffering, asukam, but anityam means it's temporary. So even if you get some good arrangement, it can't last. This is our night for literature. Shelley has a poem called Ozymandias. It's about one of the ancient Egyptian kings. So in the poem, this man out in the middle of the desert, he finds the remains of a giant statue. And it's broken at the knees, and the head part of it is lying over in the sand, sort of like half covered in sand. He said, you can still see the sort of arrogant sneer on the face. And at the base of the statue is an inscription. It says, I am Ozymandias, King of Kings. It said, look upon my kingdom in envy and despair. And the man says, but when you look, you don't see any kingdom. All you see is sand, endless sand and nothingness. So yes, at one time, he had a kingdom that was so great it would be the envy of anyone. He was the king of the world. Now he's sitting there, a broken statue, buried in the desert sand, barren wasteland. So this theme is in literature, and it's also in the scriptures. So we hear that Yudhisthira Maharaj, he met Yamaraj, the Lord of Death. So you think, if you had the opportunity to meet the Lord of Death, you'd want to ask him some questions. But instead, the Lord of Death, Yamaraj, he's asking Yudhisthira Maharaj questions about life. They're saying, in the world of the living, what's the most wonderful thing? It's like, ahani, ahani, bhutani, yachchanti, yamamalayam, shesha, stavram, yachchanti, kim ascharja atakparam. The answer, he says, I don't think there's anything more wonderful or astonishing than this, that everyone before us has died. every day the news is primarily about death. Who died? Famous people who died, or people who died of some kind of disease that's scaring the hell out of everybody, or masses of people who've died, or look in the, you know, go online and check the headlines and tell me how many references there are to deaths of world leaders, authors, famous people, not famous people, Christmas, brutal murders on Christmas. Oh, this is, he's saying, so we're, everyone before us has died, we're surrounded by death, the news every day is about death, still, we're thinking, I won't die. And they say, you know, 40% of people, you know, we're saying, well, I'll be in the other percentile. We won't be that person. So he said, I can't think of anything that's more wonderful than that. That in the world of mortality, where everything must die, people are thinking that they'll live forever. Until, as you say, that maybe some, you get some indication, a reminder, memento mori, can come in different ways. We hear the story of this Lalu Babu, who was a rich man, millionaire in India, and he went to the market at the end of the day, and he's like buying some fruits or vegetables, and the seller's telling him, it's the end of the day. You see, sun's setting, it's time to go home, make up your mind, please choose. But that simple voicing from the fruit seller, the vegetable seller, struck him differently this particular day. It struck his heart, some sympathetic chord, and he thought, yes, right, my life, I'm running out of time. Every day, sun up, sun down. Being indecisive about doing what is substantial, where to dedicate myself, where to put my maximum focus, my maximum energy. This is called Vartma Pradarsha Guru, Pata Pradarsha Guru, some divine revelation descended through an agent unknown by the agent. That type of divine instruction can be there too. So that sort of awakening came to him. There's also something described in the scriptures as smashana vairagya, which means, the smashan means the cremation ground. It means just like at the time of a funeral, we can say. At that time, people become aware how brief life is and the opportunities that come with it. Labdhva sudurlabham bahu sambhavante. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that human life, so rarely achieved, but unlike other life forms, there's some opportunity for spiritual culture, for liberation. So we have Kunti Devi realizing that adversity can be an impetus for focus and spiritual culture. Vipadakshantu takshasvat tatra tatra jagadguru bhavato darshanam yatsyad apunar bhavadarshanam. She's telling Krishna, when everything's going very nicely, there's a tendency to forget you. But when I'm put into difficulty, the force of that adversity centers me, gives focus to my mind, and then I realize the necessity of remembrance of you. So in retrospect, maybe adversity is good for me. So we'll, from time to time, we'll be thoughtful. It's not that we're going to, wake up in the morning going, I'm going to die. Maharaj said in the club, we're going to die. We're all going to die. Not all the time, but from time to time. Of course, Shankaracharya, he was very intense. One of his statements was, he said, how should you approach spiritual culture? With what sort of attitude or intensity? He said, what would you do if your hair was on fire? You could jump and you'd find water and jump in it and dunk your head in it immediately. He can say that. So there are different things that bring that about. But you know, like age is a, look, it's one of the four, right? Janma, Mrityu, Jara. But it's very deceptive. But you don't wake up one morning and all your hair is gray. You start with like, oh, I think I have a gray hair. Oh, I got three. Then sometime later, you know, half of your hair is gray and half of it isn't. And then after some time you go, I only have three black hairs. All the rest are gray. Now it comes wrinkle by wrinkle, gray hair by gray, every day, little bit, little bit, little bit. So you can be lulled into complacency. Otherwise, it's really, in one sense, a gentle warning, a little coaxing. But that's on the negative side. What about the positive side? So he said, yes, it's a waste of time for those who do not engage in some sort of spiritual culture. Does that mean shrotavyas kirtitavyas cha smartavyas chechtata bhayam? Hearing, remembering, chanting about personality of Godhead. Tavakatamritam tapta jivanam kaviviriditam kalmasha apaham sravanamangalam srimadatatam bhuvi granantite bhuridajana. Hearing about the pastimes of Krishna is something substantial to do with one's time. Otherwise, we're endlessly hearing. That's what he says, Shrotavyadini. I can't remember these slogans. Sahasra. There's thousands of things you can hear about other than Krishna Katha. So there are parallel stories, parallel narratives in the scriptures that we should become familiar with. Otherwise, we're left meditating on the persons, places, things of this world. And hearing those stories doesn't have a liberating effect. So Guru Maharaj says, Srila Saraswati Thakur used to say, when you wake up in the morning, to beat your mind like 100 times with a broomstick or any other type of similar. It's an amara jivana. Reflecting on your life, saying, oh, you know, I'm wasting my time. Wasting my time meditating on so many frivolous things. Let me today do something valuable. So we set aside at least some of our time to engage in spiritual culture, to hear, to chant, to remember. What does it say in the Bhagavatam? Narada to Vyas, nalabhyate yad brahmatam upariyada, tasyeva hetu prayate tako vido, nalabhyate yad brahmatam upariyada. Saying, try for that one thing that you... that's not available wandering the length and breadth of the universe, going through all the different species of life, all the different situations. What is that? Actual, substantial, spiritual culture. Krishna conception. Saying, karmically speaking, you're allotted a certain amount of happiness, a certain amount of suffering. So why spend your time trying to marginally increase the amount of happiness and decrease the suffering? The fish. I know, I always think that we're like leaking water or something, like in India where it's overflowing, but actually it's the fish. An aquarium. That reminds me of Gurudev talking about the fish in Govindakunda and at one point being sold. And someone objected, but Gurudev's response was, he said, this end result is going to happen to them one way or the other, in a tank, in a pond in India. He said, but these fish are thinking, oh, you know, they're like celebrating because what they were sold for, that's going to be used for the save of Guru, Gauranga, Radha Govinda, Vaishnava, and they're like, celebrating. Very advanced fish. The tree that produces the flower, if the devotee takes the flower from the tree and offers to Giriraj, then how much the tree is benefited? Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachati. Before Krishna approach the yogic Brahmins, just before that he's pointing out to Balaram and other cowherd boys, saying, look at these trees. They're so magnanimous. They're so wonderful, they're so beautiful, they're full of fruits. Flowers, fruits. It's so hot, they're bearing all the heat of the hot sun above them, and what do? Provide shade for everybody else. That's Torah Pishla Hishnuna. Right? It's blazing hot sun. They're taking all that on their head, on their top, and beneath them, they're giving shade, fruits. He's saying, these are magnanimous souls. And whatever is asked of them, they give that. And that's the hint. Right? He's going to send the cowherd boys to ask the yogic Brahmins for something. And they're going to deny him. So before they're going, look at these trees. They're so full of fruit. They're tolerant. And at the same time, shelter. They give shelter and nourishment. Like great souls. The great souls that they are. Vaikunthi or Prithivyari Sakula Chinmoy, to be a tree in the spiritual world. It's an exalted position. Then turns to the cowherd boys. Oh, there's some Brahmins nearby. They should know better. They're Brahmins. They do yajna. They were brahmacharis in the Gurukula. They studied the Vedas. They have the Upavit. They're austere. Their senses are controlled. They're everything you could want. And then some. They're Bhudeva. Bhudev. They're the gods. Earthly gods. Ask them. Ask in Balaram's name. Because I'm just a lowly cowherd boy. And Balaram's a Kshatriya. By birth. So they're Brahmins. They have that Brahmanic ego. Maybe for a Kshatriya. Munificent. Ask in his name. And the cowherd boys ask on behalf of Krishna and Balaram. And the Brahmins, they're like, Svaha. Huh? We're not done yet. Nobody can, at first the Brahmins take, do you know how this works? You read the Vedas? Brahmins will take, then afterwards the other classes. And they come back to Krishna empty-handed, they're ashamed, sorrowful. Krishna's smiling, saying, go ask their wives. Their wives, they haven't read all the Vedas, went to Gurukula, done all these. They're Brahmins, but they're wives. Housewives. I can't say that anymore. They used to say, what is your occupation? Housewife. Now you have to say executive assistant. Or, I have my own company and I'm an executive household assistant in my spare time. I have my own website. As if, raising children was not something dignified to do. But anyway, the Brahmin's wives, and it's mentioned here in the Bhagavatam, how perplexing is Krishna conception. The Aprakrita Lila of Krishna, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, she is always at the lotus feet of Vishnu, and by extension Krishna. She wanted entrance into Krishna Lila. What does Srupa Damodar tell Srivastava? She doesn't have the adhikar to be participate in that way. And Krishna Lila, so Sri Vatsa, she appears, or Sri Lekha, different, you know, a golden lion on Krishna, however you want to take it. Right? So, the question posed here, or the thought, the concept is, the goddess of fortune is attending the lotus feet of Krishna. And yet, he's begging. That is his pastime. Why? What is the underlying problem? Why is the supreme entity put in the position of a beggar? He owns everything, he controls everything. Satya Sankalpa, whatever he wills, is. Why? Always shining a spotlight on devotion. Wants to highlight the devotion of these Brahmins' wives and reciprocate with them at the same time their hearts. So they go and approach the Brahmins' wives, and they're ecstatic to have this opportunity to serve. Why? They had not seen Krishna before. They'd only heard of him. But who would they hear from him from? Fruit sellers. Flower, ladies selling fruits or flowers. Not, what are the Vedic Brahmins going to talk about? Brahma. Guru Maharaj said Brahma, primarily Brahma, with some Paramatma and a hint of Bhagavan. Shruti Bir Bhumrigyan. They're pointing in the direction. But nothing clear, nothing palpable, accessible, tangible that you could wrap your arms around. So, they heard from fruit sellers. And just like Rukmini heard, Shrutva Gunan Bhuvana Sundara Shinvatam Te Nirvisha Karna Vivarai Haratonga Tapam Rupam Dusham Dushimatam Akilarta Labam Twayat Chuta Vishati Chatram Apatrapam Me. Rukmini said, Bhuvana Sundara, hearing about you, I understand now, the most beautiful thing in the world. But as Brahma says, this is not beauty created by me. Brahma, the creator, this is beyond Vishmapayam Vedism, beyond what I conceive. Shrutva Gunan Bhuvana Sundara Shinvatamte. And she says, now I understand why there's hearing. It's not that, well, we use hearing for this and for that. No, she's saying, no, hearing is for Krishna. It allows you, allows Krishna conception to enter your heart. That is the purpose of hearing. That's why we have ears. This comes up, and the auditory sense. To hear the sweet descriptions of Krishna, the sweet sound of Krishna's flute, all of these things. It's mentioned in the Veda Stuti, the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, prayers of the personified Vedas. Say, how is it possible with the tongue is a mundane physical thing, and with your tongue and your vocal cords, you're vibrating some sound and you're going to describe God? How is that possible? You're going to vibrate the name of God with a fleshy tongue and a voice box? Right? The Wittgenstein, who was, arguably the greatest linguistic philosopher of the 20th century. he wrote these indecipherable books about language and philosophy. But while writing them, in Vienna, he lived above a gas station, petrol station, benzene station, whatever. And while he's writing the books, the guys in the gas station, they'd make coffee every day. And so Wittgenstein would be there writing, or however he was doing it. And then the smell of coffee would come wafting, like up the stairway, and he'd go... And he suddenly realized, with all my linguistic ability and skills, I can't convey to you through language the aroma of coffee. He's the greatest linguistic philosopher of the 20th century. He's saying, with all my linguistic power, I can't convey to you the aroma of coffee with words. So here, number saying, so let's have a discussion about God. I'll say some words and you'll get an idea of what God is. I can't convey the aroma of coffee, but let's have a talk about God. How is that going to work? That's their question. It's a good question. Right? It's the question in one sense. Another one of the questions. And the answer that they give there is very interesting as well. They say, no, this is why we gave you the power to speak, hear, see, touch, taste, smell, feel. This is why you have senses. So that you can hear the name of God, hear the pastimes of God, vibrate the name of God, vibrate the pastimes of God. Smell the aroma of the tulsi, of the flowers offered to divinity. Taste the Mahaprasadam. All of these things, all of these, this, all sensory activities are given mercifully for this purpose. So this goes back to your original question. So if this is really what they're meant for, can't we find like 15 minutes in our day to do that with them? Or we want to babble. Well, babble, I was going to say babble some nonsense, but that would be redundant, right? So really, that is what Sukadeva Goswami is saying when he's saying, are the eyes that don't see the beautiful form of the Lord, they're like the eyes on a peacock plume. They're not real eyes. You think, well, like, ooh, this is like very fanatical. Yeah. Right? It's a very intense point of view. But try to see beyond what it's saying superficially. There's a plane where someone can legitimately feel like that. So even in this world too, I don't know if they say it so much anymore, but when I was growing up, you'd hear these older people, they'd mention something, whatever it was, either something you had to have heard, seen, or touched, or tasted, and they say, until you've done X, you haven't lived. Right? They'd say things like that. Until you've done X, you know, that's the variable, X, fill in whatever it is, you haven't lived. You haven't fully experienced life. It's a particular sentiment they're sharing. Right? Because they're saying, having had that experience, they're saying, it's so wonderful. If you haven't ever had this, you know, your life is useless. Or you haven't really lived. Or you should, you know, curse the day you were born. Many, many things like that. They can say that in relation to mundane experience. So here we have, you know, experience transcendentalists, they're sometimes called. They're sharing their experience and saying, once you've seen the beauty of the form of Krishna, all other forms are disappointing and unacceptable. What is that? Govindakyam sloka keshi tirto pakante of Rupa Goswami? where he's saying in the inverse, if you want to maintain your attachment to the person, places, things of this world, don't go and see Govinda on the banks of the Jamuna at the Keshi Ghat. So beautiful. You'll forget all these things. So if you want to maintain your attachment here, don't go and see that. That type of beauty. Kandar pakoti kamaniya vishesha shobham. Everyone in this world is under the influence of Cupid. So what are we told? Kandarpa koti. Kandarpa means Cupid. 10 million Cupids personified point to the seductive charm of the beauty of Krishna. 10 million Cupids, that power concentrated in one person, that sort of seductive, irresistible charm. Ahoy tukiya pratyata. Guru Maharaj likes to use this word, irresistible. Not by force, not out of fear of suffering the reactions of karmic circumstances, but out of being irresistibly drawn by the beauty, charm, and sweetness of Krishna, that one automatically wants to offer themselves in service. I used to think when I heard the statements of Sukadeva Goswami, sometimes I think, gee, he sounds like a fanatical devotee. And I realize he is. Parinishthitopi nairgunya uttama shloka lilaya grihita chetarajase akyanam yadaditavan. He was liberated in the womb of his mother. Sometimes we hear he's 16, but he's like 16. In his mother's womb, came out fully developed, went like a baby and grew up. And didn't distinguish between male and female. That's why he's the loudspeaker for Srimad Bhagavatam and the Aprakrita Lila of Krishna and Krishna's pastimes with Radharani and the Braja Gopis. Had to come from someone with that type of qualification, who had no interest, back to the Shankaracharya, no interest in the relationship, mundane relationship between men and women. Singrihita chetarajarse akyanam yadaditavam. But hearing the pastimes of Krishna, my mind, heart, and soul were carried away to another plane that I didn't know existed previously. Amrita means life-giving nectar. Right? Mrityu means death. Amrita is the opposite. What's life? What is that life-giving substance? Krishna lila amrita sar tar shata shata dar das dike jaha vaha hoite. Se Chaitanya Lila Hoy, Sarovara Akshay, Manasa Charaha, Hansa Charaha, Tahate. Krishna Lila Amrita Sar. And of all these nectarine substances, Krishna Lila, the pastimes of Krishna, they're the creme de la creme of all nectarine substance. Life giving means immortal life giving substance. When I asked Srila Guru Maharaj, why in the 12th canto where the Bhagavatam is concluding, this sloka is there, Prishte Brahmyada Mandra Giri Gravagya Kanduyanan Nidralo Kamatatrite, etc. About Kurma Avatar. So I was thinking, the Kurma Avatar, wonderful. I don't understand. This is the resounding, concluding chapter of the Mahapurana, Bhagavat Purana, the 18,000 slokas, or there's a crescendo here. Why is the Kurma Avatar being mentioned? The tortoise incarnation. Gormar said, what was their object? Here, in the Kheer Sagar, in the milk ocean, the devas and the asuras, they actually have this at the Suvarnabhumi airport in Bangkok. When you leave, it's the churning of the milk ocean pastime. One side are the asuras, the other side the devas, with the serpent Vasuki wrapped around the Mandara mountain. So there, and Vishnu is on top. That's Kurmadev in a Vishnu form. So they're churning, and their idea is to achieve amrita, nectar, immortality, in the general sense. And many wonderful things are being generated from that, like the moon, Lakshmi Devi, Indra's elephant, different things. But their goal is amrita, nectar. So Guru Maharaj said, the reason the sloka is mentioned in the concluding part of the Bhagavatam is it's saying, the madhura rasa of Krishna, these pastimes with Radharani and the Braja Gopis, are the creme de la creme. They're the ultimate nectarine substance. That's the nectar that they're really trying to come in connection with. And that's what is being presented in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna.